Welcome to Blue Crew Diaries, an Empire podcast. My name is Daryl, and I will be your host as we take a look behind the mask, so to speak, sharing stories, insights, and experiences from the unique perspective of the baseball umpire. In this episode, we'll discuss how the season's going so far and things to keep an eye on when out on the field. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future episodes, drop me a line at bluecrewdiaries@gmail.com. So if you're ready, grab your indicator and plate brush, and let's hit the field. All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Blue Crew Diaries, an Empire podcast. Oh, how's the season going so far? Hopefully it's going good for you. I know it's not going too bad, I guess. A lot of strange stuff going on. This past week, the last week of May, I only worked one game. One game. That was it. There were a good number of games going on. But, I guess we've got a few new umpires that are pretty much taking up all the games. So I got relegated down to one. This isn't really the place for me to air out my feelings on that. So we will continue on with some announcements as we always do. There are still some Little League umpire outreach clinics going on. If you're interested in those and want to see if there's one in your area, littleleagueumpire.org. Check out the umpire registry. If you are not already a member of the umpire registry, I would highly recommend that you get on that. It is completely free. And it does a lot for you. There's a rules challenge on there. You can view different training videos and whatnot. One of the biggest things is, like, for next season, when you go to do your background check, you can do a background check right on the umpire registry, and that will satisfy the background check requirement for any league that you work. So instead of having to fill out the volunteer application for League A, undergo a background check, fill out the volunteer application for League B, go through the background check, League C, however many different leagues that you work, you can fill out the application and undergo the background check right on the Little League umpire registry. I believe it costs like $5. Pretty nominal fee. And that will satisfy all of your background check requirements for the entire season. And also on there, you can make your information available to, to leagues in whatever area you choose. So if they are looking for umpires, they can get on and see, hey, this umpire, they've undergone their background check and everything. Here's their contact information, and they can reach out to you and see if you want to work some games for them. So really, really helpful, a really good thing to be on. Again, that is Little League Umpire. .org. The other thing, as is typical on my shows now, one thing is, I know I talk a lot about California District 4. That is currently the district that I kind of look to for rules clinic videos and different documentation. I know there are a lot of other districts that do a lot for their umpires. Maine District 4, for example, down towards the southern part of the state, on their Facebook page, they pretty much every day, at least every weekday during the season, they will put up some sort of, let's just call it a blog post, whether it's talking about a particular rule or how something is supposed to work, things like that. They put up one the other day about appeals and how to properly, do an appeal on the field. And it's very helpful not only to umpires, but to managers and coaches as well, and as well as parents. So they can, help maybe teach their kids some of this stuff that the players don't necessarily know. I know I keep going back to California District 4, but they're kind of the gold standard in my view of umpire training. If there are others out there that you think are better than California District 4, shoot me an email, bluecrewdiaries@gmail.com. Let me know about them, and I'll check them out. But speaking of California District 4, they are starting to put up their rules clinics regarding tournament rules, as we are here in the United States starting to get into tournament time. Very, very helpful videos when it comes to tournament stuff. I believe two clinic videos are already up. Yes, tournament umpire training session 1 and 2 are up. I believe they have a grand total of 3 or something like that. They also have a full video for, they call it tournament director orientation. So if you are not necessarily an umpire, but you are a tournament director, there you go. Lots of good videos on that YouTube channel. And to get there, simply youtube.com/@CAD4. So that's @CharlieAlphaDelta4 for those of you who like the phonetic alphabet, or if you prefer the police version, it is @CharlesAdamDavid4. Don't even get me started on phonetic alphabet. I just makes my brain hurt, some of the phonetics that people come up with. So getting into today's main topic, before I get off on my soapbox again, I wouldn't say a lot of games this season. My game count is actually a little down from the last couple of years because we have newer umpires coming in. And one thing about that is, technically, in the league that I work, we have 3 different assigners for umpires. 3. One of them is a member of the board of directors, and he doesn't really assign games. He more deals with the 2 other assigners, and they kind of report to him, and he does whatever he does. So he's technically kind of the umpire in chief, even though he's, to my knowledge, not an umpire. Real nice guy. I love working with him, but he's not an umpire. He just has the title, and then we've got basically 2 assigners. One assigner, honestly, I've never even met. That should tell you how crazy this whole season is. I haven't even met the guy yet, at least not that I know of. And he is the one that is bringing in like these out-of-town umpires. And it seems whenever he brings in an umpire from out of town, it's usually for a majors game, and he always gives them the plate. So basically, he looks at the schedule. This is the vibe that I get. I don't know officially what's actually going on here, but this is just the vibe that I get from this whole thing. He looks at the schedule. He assigns his people. He's got like 2 or 3 or even more different umpires that he kind of assigns for. And he'll put those people into the games that they can work and basically almost fill out the entire schedule with these guys and then hand it over to my assigner, who is the same assigner that I've been working for the last now 3 years. And this other assigner will hand it off to him and say, fill in the rest. Well, 3/4 of the games are already filled by these other umpires who the last 2 years have not worked in this league. But yet suddenly they are now getting preferential treatment over myself and my friend Darren, who, I mean, Darren, he's kind of like my mentor. He's been working with this league forever, both as an umpire and then as a coach even before that. And myself, this is my 3rd season. The only umpiring I do is for this single league. It's the only games I've ever worked is for this league. And yet now these out-of-town umpires are getting preferential treatment and getting all the plate jobs and the majors games and everything over myself and Darren, who are pretty much, you could say, loyal to the league. I don't think that's right. I honestly don't. And the league, let's call him UIC, the one that kind of oversees all of this, he doesn't even really think it's right. He thinks that local league umpires should be getting the plate games and the majors games, you know, in the local league, you know. But yet he still hasn't kicked this other guy to the curb yet and said, no, I want our guys in these, you know, in these games. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, I've said it in previous episodes, you know, coming into this 2025 season, I honestly didn't know if I was going to work for this league. And now I'm already thinking about whether or not I'm going to work for this league next year. Because I am highly considering going somewhere else. I know there are other leagues right here in the local area that need umpires. So if I've been loyal to this one league for 3 years now, and other people that have never worked this league before are getting the good jobs, why do I need to be here? That's just my thought. And I'm not saying that these other umpires that I've worked with are bad umpires. They're not. They're decent. Let's put it that way. You know, they're decent umpires. I've noticed every umpire does things different. I think I mentioned in a previous podcast, I was working with an umpire, one of these out-of-towners, named Dean, and he showed up, you know, and looked like just the traditional, like, backyard umpire with the, you know, the blue pullover with the red and white stripes on it and the single ball bag and sneakers and whatnot. You know, the adjustment straps on his mask are flailing out like, you know, like Albert Einstein's hair. But real nice guy, but he's got his own way of working. You know, he does the, as Darren would call it, he does the gun for a strike. He points out to the side. For strike two, he just points 2 fingers out to the side and says, 2. Okay, Dean, 2 what? 2 balls, 2 strikes, 2 outs, what? Obviously, within the context, if you're paying attention, you know it's 2 strikes. But It's like, to what? Like, another umpire that I worked with a couple of weeks ago, real nice guy. So he's been umpiring for like 5 or so years. He worked down in Florida, came back up to Maine, whatnot. And he's the backwards umpire. He carries his indicator in his right hand. And when he gives the count, him and Dean are both one of those, you know, hold two fists up, count is full. They're those kind of guys. I have my own thoughts on them. But this other umpire, when he gives the count, but almost every other umpire, it's balls on the left hand, strikes on the right hand, right? Yeah, he's backwards. He gives balls on the right hand, strikes on the left, which confuses the hell out of me when I'm working the bases and I look up and he's got, you know, three fingers on the right hand up and one finger on the left hand up. I'm looking at it going, he's got three strikes and one ball? What? Oh, wait, duh, he's backwards. Okay, he means three balls, one strike. He just needs to switch his hands around. But yeah, everybody has their own different thing. Watch out for that. I did work a majors game at a new to me field the other day. We'll get into that. And I had another new umpire from this other assigner. Real nice kid. He seems like he really wants to learn. He just has no idea what he's doing. So luckily we both got there about an hour before the game. So I was able to go over stuff with him. And, he did fine. But he's got a lot of work ahead of him. Let's just put it that way. So, I titled this episode Head on a Swivel. And this is just some bullet points of some stuff that I've seen over the last month or so that we've been playing up here in Maine, and just things that you need to think about when you're on the field. The first thing is always be looking at the field and keep your head on a swivel. So I'll kind of try to break this down into two parts. Always be looking at the field. Always. Always, 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 always. If you are one of those umpires that always has to look down at your indicator, you need to learn to work the indicator so you don't have to look down. Okay? If my indicator has one ball and two strikes, pitch comes in, swing, strike three, batter's out. I don't even have to look at my indicator to reset it. I know it's simply one click on the strike wheel, three clicks on the ball wheel, and one click down on the out wheel. That's it. I don't even have to look at the indicator to reset ball strikes and at an out. I don't need to. Most all indicators that I've ever seen, when you move the wheel to a different number, it lets out an audible click. And sometimes you can even feel it in your finger on the dial. So be listening for that. That way you don't have to look down at your indicator. If you do have to look at your indicator, bring the indicator up in front of your face so you can keep your eyes out on the field. And I'll tell you why this matters. 2 weeks ago, I was working a game on the bases. It was a majors game. We had runners on first and third, one out. I'm over in the C position, and the batter strikes out looking. Umpire calls strike three. Pretty aggressive strike three call, by the way. I kind of like it. So he punches the kid out. The catcher throws the ball back to the pitcher. The pitcher isn't even on the dirt of the mound. He's on the grass. Now, remember, there are runners on first and third. Well, as soon as the ball got to the batter, they both popped off their bases. The kid on first jumped a little early. Not terrible, but he did leave early. But they decided not to go anywhere. He decided to stay at first. Well, the pitcher gets the ball, turns and looks at first base, and sees that this runner is just kind of nonchalant, just slowly walking back to the base. First baseman standing right there at the base. Pitcher grabs the ball, fires to first, and gets the out. Now, I'm over in the C position between second and third base. I'm over 60 feet away from this. I saw the pitcher turn. I saw him throw the ball to first, and I see the tag. I start walking towards first base. I point towards first base with my left hand, bring up the hammer in the right hand, and verbalize out at first. The plate umpire had no idea that anything happened. It happened so quick that he punched the batter out, looked down at his indicator, and when he looked back up, I'm standing there pointing at first base with my right fist in the air. And he's like, what just happened? Of course, that was out number three, so all the players started headed back to the dugout. And I walked over to my between innings position. And the plate umpire comes walking over to me. He says, what happened? What'd I miss? So, well, the pitcher decided to backpick the runner at first and got him. Oh. Well, I was wondering what happened because everybody's like running back to the dugout. I look down to reset my indicator and I look up and you're signaling an out at first. I say, what'd I miss? Always be looking at the field. Always. And always keep your head on a swivel. And basically, that means always be looking for things. I had my very first obstruction call on a third baseman in that same game. Runner from second, or actually the runner was on first. There was a line drive to right, fairly deep right. And I believe there was also a runner on second because I was in C. Or it might have been a runner on third. I honestly don't remember. But I do remember the ball goes out, so I go in. So I cross the base path to the working area, and it was a runner on second. So he goes by. As I'm working my way in, I just happen to look over to third base to make sure he gets the touch at third. And as I quickly glance over there, I notice the third baseman is standing a good 10 feet from the base, but right in the lane, or right in the runner's path to that base. The runner had to check up and almost literally push the third baseman out of the way to get around him so he could get to third. If I hadn't just glanced over to check on that touch at third base, I never would have seen that. So I immediately called obstruction on the third baseman. It didn't matter anyway because the runner tagged third and kept going and ended up walking into home. I mean, he was safe by a mile and a half. because they didn't even throw the ball to home. They just got it back into the infield. So obviously the obstruction was waved off, but I still had it because I kept my head on a swivel. Let's see. What else do I have here? Ah, yes. I believe it was that same game. There was a lot of base work in this game. I was in A. We had no runners on. It was a pop fly to short right field. And I mean short right, to the point where the first baseman, second baseman, and the right fielder all came in for this ball. Or I should say the first baseman backed up for it, and the second baseman and the right fielder came in. And I'm watching this happen, and all three players are indicating, I got it. And I'm like, this is not going to be good. I talked to the plate umpire later, and he said he was watching it and thought, this is not going to be good. I'm expecting a huge collision. Ball's going to be on the ground. This isn't good. This is going to be bad here in about 2 seconds. The ball comes down. I see the first baseman's glove go up, and all three of them, they all ended up in the exact same area at the exact same time, but they all stopped short of an actual physical collision. They all just kind of came together and stopped. I see the first baseman's glove come up. I see the catch. And then all three players drop to the ground. Now, what do you think a rookie umpire might do in this situation? Well, I saw the ball in the glove, so I immediately call it out, right? Wrong. I waited. Everybody went to the ground. I took a couple of steps back to where I could see the glove. I saw that the ball was still in the glove, secure possession. And then the first baseman sits up, reaches into the glove, takes the ball out. So I've got secure possession. I've got voluntary release. That's an out. Okay, that is a catch. I signaled it, said that's a catch. And we played on from there. But had I jumped the gun, so to speak, and immediately called that out, as soon as I saw the ball hit the glove, what do you think would have happened? The ball would have come out of the glove involuntarily, and now I'm standing here looking like an idiot because the ball's on the ground and I just called the out. No. This is not good. Luckily, I waited. Turns out I didn't need to, but just little things to think about. Make sure that there is secure possession and then voluntary release before you start making your call. Another one is always wait to make a call on a ball that could be foul. Reason I say this, the majors game I had this past week, the one game I had that week, I was working the plate, and we had a ground ball, came off the bat, and hit the first base line, but it was on the foul side of the line about two ball widths. But as it was going down the line, it curved back in, fair, crossed the line into fair territory where the first baseman grabbed it, took two steps, stepped on first base, that's an out. Now, as soon as that ball came off the bat and went into foul territory, if I had just called it foul right there and killed the play, I just killed what ended up being a fair ball. I know there are some umpires out there that will do that. They'll see a ball. Oh, it's in foul territory. Yep, foul ball. Or, as it should be, foul. And then the ball crosses back into fair territory, and it's like, look what you did. Now, obviously, if it stayed foul until it was past first base and then came back fair, then it's a foul ball. But this one came back fair about 10 feet from first base before it got there. Don't be too quick on your calls. That very same game, there was a play at first on a runner coming back, retreating back to the base. And my base umpire, who, like I said, did a good job, but needs work. Ball comes in. He sees the tag go down. He immediately starts to throw up the hammer, gets his arm about halfway up, and then sees that the ball is on the ground, not in the glove. So now he's mid-call, and he suddenly has to change from an out to a safe mechanic. So that was something that him and I talked about at the end of that inning. I said, you got the call right, but just take a second or two. You know, you don't need to rush, especially in that situation. You want to make sure you get the call right the first time. Just take a couple of seconds. Okay, secure possession. There was the tag. Do we have voluntary release? No, because the ball's on the ground. Okay, safe. Always just try to slow down. I know I'm guilty of it myself, of you see a play and you immediately just want to hammer that runner out, or you immediately want to give the you know, the big flary safe mechanic. It looks like you're trying to fly away. Don't. Give it a second and just process everything before you make that call. 2 weeks ago, I was caught in a rundown situation between first and second. The runner, he's going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Now I'm looking for interference. I'm looking for obstruction. I'm looking for the tag. Well, the shortstop comes in, gets the ball, and then trips over his own 2 feet as he's trying to tag the runner and falls down. Okay, that was nobody's fault. That was his own. He fell. But the glove was really close to tagging the runner. I did not make any call because I did not see a tag. From the vantage point that I was standing at, which was literally almost on top of the play, there was visible daylight between the glove and the jersey at the closest point where there could have been contact. I could still see a sliver of daylight there with my own eyes. Runner gets into second. I rule him safe. Next thing I know, I hear time being called. I figured it was one of the coaches. No, it was Dean, the plate umpire. And I turn around and I see him jogging out towards me. So I go walking in, and we get together, and he looks at me. He says, did he not tag him? And I'm thinking to myself, Dean, if he had tagged him, I'd have called the runner out. I didn't. So therefore, he didn't tag him, did he? But just that question, did he not tag him? No. No, there was no tag. There was daylight between the glove and the jersey. Oh, okay. Well, it looked like he did. But yeah, it looked like he tagged him to you. This rundown is taking place between first and second base, and you're still standing behind the damn plate. Of course it looked to you like there was a tag. I was a hell of a lot closer than you were, and there wasn't one. And why are you coming out here and questioning me? The defensive coach, I can see coming out and saying, hey, it looked like there was a tag. You know, was there one? Or what did you see that made you, you know, give the safe call when he got to second? I would expect that. I'm not expecting my partner to come out, oh, well, it looked like there was a tag there. Really, dude? Like, come on. And that's the problem with these other umpires. Dean, for instance, at the plate meeting, a question came up about a uncaught third strike. Or as everybody and their grandmother calls it, dropped third. Ugh, God, how I hate that term. Uncaught third strike. When does the runner forfeit their opportunity to run to first base? Well, it's when they physically enter the dugout or other dead ball area. They can walk right to the dugout door and then turn around and run to first base. They just can't walk into the dugout. And then Dean, the plate umpire, says, literally, one of the coaches gave that explanation. And Dean says, well, that's not how it normally works, but if that's the way you guys want to do it, that's fine with me. Okay. So, after the plate meeting, the managers walked away, and I'm standing there with Dean watching the warm-up pitches, and I said, oh, by the way, with that question on the uncaught third strike, in Little League, it's when they, you know, enter the dugout or dead ball area, they give up their opportunity to run to first. Oh, well, I guess I haven't seen that. Well, you would have if you looked in the damn Little League rule book. I mean, maybe in NFHS and all the other leagues that you umpire for, they have different rules regarding that, but this is the rule in Little League. So maybe you need to kind of freshen up on your Little League rules there, buddy. I don't know. So now that I've rambled on and on and on, I do want to share one funny story that came out of the game this past Thursday. And this is one of the funniest things I've ever heard on a baseball field since I've been umpiring. Batter comes up, takes a ball, a little high and outside. The next pitch, apparently, I don't know if he decided to do this himself or he got the sign from the coach, but he decides to try to lay down a bunt. No big deal. It was a very nice bunt, but the catcher ended up getting to it, threw him out at first. Good play all around by both the catcher and the batter. But the funny part of this was I'm standing behind the plate, and the catcher was a kid named Griffin. Good catcher, good batter. He's got a pretty good bat this year. He's already hit one home run, and not a Little League home run either. I mean, straight from the bat over the fence. And he's had a couple other hits that I've seen this season that have almost gone over the fence. Only fell like 5 feet short, if that. But he's also a very good catcher. I feel pretty safe behind him. So Griffin's there in the catcher's box, and he's down. He's got his mitt up. He's ready to go. The batter is ready to go. The pitcher starts his windup, and I see the batter start squaring the bat. And just as he squares the bat, I hear the batter say, "Sorry, Griffin," and then drops the bunt down. Funniest thing I have ever heard on a baseball field. Just, "Sorry, Griffin," tap. I've never heard of a batter apologizing to the catcher for making the catcher go get this bunt. Funniest thing ever. I was laughing after the play. It ended up being the third out of the inning. I was laughing. Like, seriously? I don't know. Maybe it's one of those you had to be there. But it was just funny. So that brings us to our question of the month. And this question of the month should be fairly easy if you know your baseball rules. And the question is as follows. When does the infield fly rule go into effect? When does the infield fly rule go into effect? Think about that, and maybe we'll talk about that in the next episode. But if you don't know the answer, good time to get into the rule book and look it up. So with that, we come to the end of another episode. This one ran a little bit longer than I was intending, thanks to my constant jabbering. But if you stuck in there for the entire time, I do appreciate you very much. Thank you for listening. Always be sure to subscribe. You can listen to these episodes wherever you get podcasts. I just hit the microphone. I apologize. These episodes are also up on YouTube. Eventually on the YouTube channel, I will start possibly doing videos. I'm starting to lose my voice. Maybe some gear reviews, breakdowns of different, Little League videos and such. If there's anything you want to see on the YouTube channel or topic here on the podcast, again, send me an email, bluecrewdiaries@gmail.com. And, we will go from there. So, as always, thank you all very much for listening, and I will see you on the diamond.